Take your Bibles and join me tonight and turn to the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 22 is where we'll be tonight. Genesis chapter 22. Thursdays, that's the day where I probably get to spend the most time with the freshman class. In the fall, I have them at 8 o'clock for personal evangelism, and then the very difficult class, freshman orientation, at 11:15 or whenever we finish chapel. And when I teach them, I'm reminded that probably my freshman year was probably of my dormitory years. My freshman, sophomore, and junior years, I was a dorm student. It was probably my favorite. And I've often gone back and I've thought about that, and I've thought, why was my freshman year my favorite year? Maybe it's because I didn't know much, and I just, you know, had lots of fun. I had four roommates that year. There were five of us in the room. And I was raised as an only child. And so all of a sudden, when I'm thrown in a room with four other people, it was an awakening for me. I learned the world didn't revolve around me. I had to give up my space. I had one fella who snored. Another guy above me who, everyone else could hear his alarm clock but him. And another roommate who thought he could sing, but he could not. And it was just an interesting year. But we got along so well. It was just a great year. Maybe it was because the next year I was an ARA, and the year after that I was an RA, so I had to be the bad guy sometimes. And maybe that was it. I don't know. But my freshman year, I really, really enjoyed it. And I met people that year that that I still to this day keep in touch with. Sometimes we talk about things that we've gotten into and serving the Lord, and just sometimes laugh and cut up. There's a text group. I know it's hard for you to believe it, but some of us older ones, we do actually participate in a text group. Now, that can drive you nuts sometimes when they're texting about all kinds of things and your phone's just dinging repeatedly. I don't like that. But, it's just neat. Sometimes we'll talk about the blessings of the Lord. Sometimes we talk about serious things. Other times, do you remember when? And, we just encourage each other. And so for you freshmen, I hope you have half the experience that I did. If you had half the experience I did, you'll have a great one. And the friendships that I made and the lessons that I learned. And so enjoy your freshman year. And if the upperclassmen pick on you, let me know, all right? And we will pick on them and let them know where they stand. But we're glad for our freshman class that's here. It's good to see our returners back. I haven't really had a chance to catch up with much of you. Some of you I saw during the summer, and look forward to catching up with many of you, hearing how your summer went and the experiences that you had, and how God is leading and working in your life. It may be that as a result of the summer, you've come out with some direction, and you say, after I graduate, this is what I think I'm going to do. So we've got a whole semester to catch up, and I'm looking forward to it. Genesis 22 tonight. And I'd like to begin reading in verse number 1. The Bible says, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and saddled his ass, and took two of the young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood and the burnt offering, and rose up and went into the place of which God had told him. And then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father? And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, "My son, God will provide Himself a lamb for a burnt offering." So they both went, both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called him out of heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here am I." And he said, "Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me." And in the verses that we've read tonight, we've read an incredible story. How that a man, I believe without any hesitation, without any flinching whatsoever, was willing to give God the most precious thing he had. And so must we be willing to do so tonight. You know, when I came to college, I was reminded of that dreaded thing called tests. You know, you graduate from high school and you're so tickled to be out of high school, but the college, you're just baptized again. You just go from senior year of high school to the freshman year of college. You've climbed the pinnacle only to fall down on the floor again. And one of the disappointments you experience is you're reminded about tests. And I still remember in my freshman year, there was one particular test that I really enjoyed. Dr. Childs employed this method very often. It was called the true-false test. I love those questions. I mean, after all, you had a 50% chance of getting the right answer. There were times where you were clueless, but you still had 50%. And I like that. But you know, I also learned there were other teachers that employed different methods, and another testing method was called multiple choice. I didn't like that nearly as much because my odds were cut in half. Now I'm not looking at a 50% chance of getting the right answer, but 25%, and usually two of the answers seemed so similar that it was always a confusing thing. But there was one particular test that I was introduced to a little later in my college career that to this day still sends shivers up my spine. It's called the essay test. I had a Hebrew teacher, his name Mr. Sheets. He was the dean of students at the time. And one day we were in Hebrew class, and Brother Sheets looked at us, and it may not have been Hebrew, it actually may have been eschatology. I had him for several classes, but in this particular class, he started the class, and he was setting us up, but I had no clue what he was doing. He said, "All right," he said, "hey guys, I have a question for you. The end of this week, we're going to have a test. Would you like to have a test with 2 questions or 50 questions?" Well, to me, initially, that was a no-brainer. All of us looked around at each other in consensus, and we were like, "Oh, we'll take 2 over 50. And he said, "Well, then that's what we'll do." I thought, how nice for the teacher to let us choose the method of testing. Only to show up at class at the end of the week, and I was totally blown away by what I saw. It was a test, all right, and it only had 2 questions. But it was my introduction to an essay question. Those 2 questions that he gave us, to be honest, it was so traumatic, I can't remember what they were. But I will tell you this, question 1 was like the equivalent of summarize the Old Testament on this ream of paper. That's what I felt like it was saying. And I felt like question 2 was just do the New Testament while you're at it. And it was a devastating experience. If you catch me after that class, I'm wanting true, false, multiple choice. I'll even take a Dr. Comfort fill in the blank test. But no essay. By far, at that point in my college career, it was the hardest test I had ever taken in my life. But young people, I want to tell you tonight, the hardest tests that you're ever going to take are not going to be in a classroom. The hardest tests that you're ever going to take are going to be in life. Yeah. And the truth is, you don't know the questions. The truth is, I don't know all of the questions that you'll face tonight. But I will tell you this, as strange as it may seem, I do know the answer. You say, well, how can you tell us the answer if you don't know the questions? I have no idea of the many questions that you will be bombarded with in life, the crossroads that you will come to. But I will tell you this, the answer is always the same as taught by Abraham in these two words. Listen, trust God. And tonight I want you to see that Abraham was willing to trust God with the dearest thing that he had. And the question for us tonight is, are you, am I, willing to do the same? And so to help us understand Abraham's plight, maybe to help us to understand the depth of God's request upon Abraham and how we ought to respond, I want you to see three things tonight. The first thing is this. I want you to see the description of the test. I want to describe for you the test that Abraham experienced. I believe one day when we get to heaven and we see Abraham, we asked Abraham, Abraham, on the other side of heaven, on this trail of tears known as the earth, Abraham, what was the hardest thing you ever encountered? I'm sure in the top three, Abraham would say the day that God asked me to sacrifice my son Isaac. And I want to describe for you the test tonight. And in order to describe that test, I want you to see three things. I want you to see the teacher. I want you to see the student. And I want you to see the subject. In order to understand the test that Abraham experienced, you have to see the teacher, you have to see the student, you have to see the subject. All of those things are true even in a classroom setting today. I was coming to freshman orientation this morning. I was a little bit late, and boy, a very concerned freshman came out the door looking for me to see if I had died. I figured she was probably going to the Commons and saying, let's buy snacks and coffee and party this hour. The teacher won't be here. But when you walk into a classroom, you have the teacher, you have the students, and then you have the subject at hand. Let's talk for just a moment about the teacher in this classroom that Abraham's experiencing. Notice with me again verse number 1. When the Bible tells us, and it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. Now in that very first half of the verse, we already find something that causes us to say, The Bible says that God did tempt Abraham. Now many times when you read the Bible and you hear the word tempt, what definition, what idea comes to your mind? You'd say a solicitation to do evil. Somebody would say, well, the devil tempted Jesus in Matthew chapter 4 and Luke chapter 4. You're right. You'd say, when I think about temptation, if somebody came to me and said, are you tempted? I would think that it would be a solicitation to do evil. In the vast majority of times that you see the word tempt, that is the definition. But the word tempt also has another meaning. And that meaning is simply to test. Now I ask you tonight, which definition is true to verse number 1? Is it temptation? Is it a solicitation to do evil? Or is it merely a test? The Bible answers that question. Did you know that? I hope that while you're in school, yes, you learn a little bit about commentaries, but I hope you'll learn the Bible's the best commentary on the Bible. Sometimes Matthew Henry is wrong. There are times that Harry Ironside is wrong, and I like reading his devotional commentaries. There's times that you read a commentary and it's wrong, but listen to me, when Peter or James is commenting about the Old Testament, he's always right because he's doing it under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. In the book of James, the Bible says this, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. Now here it is, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. Here's the plain answer. Listen, when you have a solicitation to do evil, God is not the one whispering in your ear. Now with that being understood, here's the conclusion you have to come to, is that God is testing Abraham. And God is the teacher. And the teacher asks the student to do a very hard thing. I remember when I was in high school, in public high school, I took English. And we had a particular English teacher who just had a hateful disposition. I guess I could understand if I had to teach English every day, I'd probably have a hateful disposition. Some of you are real grammarians. You say, I love English. Well, I would think this lady should love English, but every day when she came to class, she seemingly had a hateful disposition. And the truth is, there were times that she asked us to do things that either didn't make sense or we thought was well nigh impossible. I'll never forget, she came into the classroom one day and she said, all right, we were reading the old English classic, Beowulf. You say, what was that? I've forgotten. But we were reading that old classic and she said, all right, in a few days you're going to have a test on Beowulf. And she said, I want you to know that in the history of my teaching career, nobody has ever made 100 on this test. Well, that'll encourage your heart, won't it? I mean, it was just like she wanted us to know that our death was imminent. And I'll be honest, I heard her make that declaration. I shrugged my shoulders and I said, well, I'll become another one of the masses, but at least it'll be over with. And so I did. I gave it a good shot. I read all of the assignment. I even studied it the night before. And I really gave myself to trying. But, you know, this teacher didn't really inspire me. If anything, she made me think she wanted to kill us all. And so the day of the test came. I remember I was taking the test. And you know how it is. And if you don't, you will very soon next week when you start taking tests. But when you take those tests and you answer all the questions that you know, and then you leave the others blank, and then you go back to the ones that you don't know and you do your best to try to fill those in. I've always been in the persuasion, why leave something blank? I mean, at least try. And so I did everything that I knew, and I remember one particular section that I had difficulty with. It was a matching section where you match the character with the characteristic. And there were probably four or five characters that I'm confused as I'm looking at the characteristic and the character. And I can still remember looking at that part and I said, well, that sounds like it would be this. I think that's it. But then there were a couple, it was like, I have no clue, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. It was just like, well, we'd put one down. And I'll admit, I turned in the test, I didn't give it a second thought, and then a few days later, we came back in the classroom, and this lady was on fire. I mean, with eyes of fire, she's looking to all of us, and she said, I cannot believe this. She said, for the first time in my teaching career, somebody made 100 on this test. Well, I'll be honest, when I heard it, I began to scan the classroom and I was looking for the guys that had pocket protectors and lots of pens and glasses with thick tape. I thought I'd go to every one of them afterwards and say, I don't know which one of you it was, but I'd like to shake your hand. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I watched that teacher pick up the perfect test, wander over to the right side of the classroom, stop at my desk and put it right there. And I want you to know, my head was bowed, but it was not in humility. There was a big smirk on my face. If she'd seen it, she would have smacked it off my face. I couldn't believe it. But as you can tell, some, 30 years later, I don't really have fond memories of that day. Yeah, I made 100, but I felt like that teacher was asking me to do something unreasonable. As a matter of fact, I even have questions to this day as to whether or not that teacher wanted me to fail. And you know what happens? Sometimes God asks us to do something that we think's well nigh impossible, and if we're not careful, we treat Him like a 10th grade English teacher. I know you may say, well, I'm young and inexperienced, but I'm going to tell you, even at this phase of your life, I imagine God's asked you to do some things and give up some things and to trust Him in areas where you initially didn't want to. And sometimes doubt seizes your mind and you say, God, here I am in my senior year and I feel like I'm no farther along than I was my freshman year. Lord, have you left me for dead? I just want to take a moment to remind you something about the teacher. You know what? The teacher knows exactly what you need and when you need it. And God is not in heaven wanting you to fail. God is wanting you to succeed. But there are hard questions that you have to answer and valleys that you've got to walk through to teach you to trust God. You see, God is the teacher. But I want you to see Abraham's a student. God did tempt Abraham. What kind of student was Abraham? Let me tell you, Abraham was not a flunky. God told Abraham, remember Abraham was in Ur of the Chaldees, and God told Abram, who was at that time, that was his name, Abram, I want you to follow me. The Bible tells us that Abram believed God and it was accounted unto him as righteousness. Abram left his family and a pagan environment that was all he knew to follow Jehovah. And later on, God would make promises to Abraham. He'd say, Abraham, you see all those stars? Your children are going to be like the stars. You're going to have a lot of kids. A nation is going to rise up out of you. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was not a flunky. He exhibited such a measure of faith that we read about him in Hebrews chapter 11. And I want to tell you, if God tested Abraham, mark it down, He'll test you and He'll test me. You know what some of you seniors are going to find out this year? God's going to test you in ways you never imagined. You may find yourself closer to the exit point with no clue what to do. And if you're not careful, listen, as a student, you get the jitters and you begin to doubt God. Hey, I want to tell you, that's the time when you hang in and you look to Him more than ever. There's some of you freshmen here tonight. And you know what college has done? College has not only shown you how poor you're going to be for the next 4 years, but already in the first week, it's brought you maybe to the end of yourself where you don't even talk to anybody else. You're just like, I'll just stay bottled up in my room and you can cry a big bundle of tears underneath a blanket. Or for you guys that are too manly to cry, you think you go out somewhere and you're like, man, I just don't know if I can handle this. Let me tell you, God tested Abraham and God is testing you. He's testing you right now. You're a student in his classroom. Long time after you leave Ambassador, you're still going to be in his classroom. God is the teacher. Abraham's the student. But here's the subject, faith. It humors me to ask people what their favorite subject is. Yeah, somebody say, what's your favorite subject? Math? And they're like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. I like math. What are you going to be when you grow up? An engineer. Well, you better like math then. Other people, what do you like? They say, history. You like to read biographies? Yes, history, history, history. You get up somebody else and say, what's your favorite class? English? And they're like, please don't say that word. You know, right now you say, well, I'm taking 18 hours. Some of you are like, I'm taking 14 hours. Some of you say, I'm only taking 12. You know, wherever you're at in the spectrum, did you know that God didn't make you all identical? And I thank God He didn't make you identical. You know, there's some of you in this room right now, you're like, well, I'm not taking 18 hours. There must be something wrong with me. Listen, if 12 hours is what you need to take, you do the best you can and glorify God. There's some of you, you probably need to be taking 30 hours just to keep you out from being idle. And you know, you don't apply yourself. You lean on your talent, your ability, and you don't really apply yourself and you underachieve. Let me tell you, sometimes a C by a 12-hour student brings more glory to God than an A of a 4.0 student. But no matter how many hours you're taking, there's a class you've enrolled in. It's not in your syllabi. It's not on your course schedule, but you're in it. It's called faith. Now you're having to trust God for finances. You're having to trust God for emotional strength to make it through a day. You're having to trust God with your future, and you say, Lord, whatever you want. But it's a class that you need, and this is why Hebrews 11 and verse 6, for without faith it is impossible to please Him. There's some of you, you came here to learn about the Pentateuch and you came to learn a little bit about eschatology and ecclesiology, but it may be by the time you hit December, you've learned more about faith than anything else. And so the first thing we see tonight is we see the description of the test. God is the teacher. Abraham is the student. The subject is faith. But the second thing that I want you to see tonight is I want you to see the difficulty of the test. I want you to understand what makes it hard. I want you to see very clearly the circumstances that God orchestrates to make this the hardest test that maybe Abraham has experienced in his life as a child of God. Now, in order to understand that, the first thing you need to see is you need to see the object of the sacrifice, that's Isaac. Verse number 2, and he said, take now thy son. He wasn't asking God for money. He was asking for Abraham's own flesh and blood. You know, I have three children. If you came to me afterwards and said, Brother Bill, I need to take one of your children, you're never going to see them again, which one is it? And I just looked at you and I said, well, that's okay. I've got three. I can spare one. You'd say, that's not natural. It's not. Even with three children, I wouldn't give you... Listen, you can't have any of them. But when he says, take now thy son, his own flesh and blood... It's like with every phrase, God puts the magnifying glass on this sacrifice more and more. Take now thy son, here it is, thine only son. Some of you tonight, you say, no, wait a second, Abraham did have another child at this point in the game. You're right, he did. Some of you are like, yeah, wait just a second. Remember, he and Sarah got ahead of God, and Sarah said, here, take my handmaid, and he had a child named Ishmael. You say, yeah, I remember that. And here God says, take now thy son, thine only son. You say, well, God must have been mistaken. No, I'll tell you, if you believe that, you're the one that's mistaken, and here's why. Because when God said, take now thy son, thine only son, it was a very pointed reference to where God said, give me the son of promise, the one that I promised you. God only promised Abraham one. And that was Isaac. Now, that's a pretty big thing for Abraham to put Isaac on the altar. You want to know why? Because all of the promises that God made to Abraham, and basically Abraham's entire future, is wrapped up in Isaac. Abraham, you see all those stars? Your children are going to be like the stars. All those children are going to be hatched from the son of promise. His name is Isaac. Do you know what I believe? This is what I believe. I believe that when Abraham put Isaac on that altar, you know what he was doing? He was putting his future on the altar. And I believe that every person in this room tonight needs to do the same thing. Maybe you've come here and you've got all kinds of plans drawn up for yourself. If you've come here and you say, I'm doing my parents a favor, and then after that, I'm going to do what I want. For others of you tonight, you say, well, I just think I'm going to do this and this, and I'm going to live a comfortable life. You know, the best thing that any person in this room tonight can do is to put your future on the altar. Some of you ladies, maybe if after the service, I said, write down on this piece of paper everything that you want in the future. You might say, well, okay, I want to have four children, two boys, two girls, each of them with this color hair and eyes and this skin complexion. and this personality. And then I would like to drive a nice SUV to carry the kids, of course. And I would like to live in a nice home. And my husband, I'd like for him to be about 6'3", dark-headed and handsome, which basically rules out most of the guys here. You know what? You probably make your list up and say, this is the way I would like for it to be, all right? If that resonates with you, listen, do that after the service. Write that up. Write it up the way that you think. And then after you do it, take that piece of paper and crumple it in your hand and throw it away. Because you know what I've learned in my own experience? I learned that God did a lot better job with my future than I ever would have. I'm talking to some of you here tonight. You're as stubborn as a mule. You have come. You've resisted. Maybe you've been here for 1, 2, 3, 4 years. And you have your own plans. You say, this is the way that I want it to be. If Abraham had the same mentality, he would have never put Isaac on the altar. He said, take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac. You know, Isaac was a miracle baby if there ever was a miracle baby. How precious was Isaac to Abraham and Sarah? He was the miracle baby. You say, well, how special was he? I know it's hard to believe, but before COVID, you know, we'd have nursing home ministry. Imagine with me being in a nursing home. And you're going up and down the hallways, you're inviting people to the nursing home service. Service is going to be at 11 o'clock. You make it a habit, you're knocking on doors, and you go by one particular door, the nameplate says Miss Sarah. You open up the door, and you look, and here it is in July, and she's sitting beside of the heater with a sweater on, and a bundle of blankets in her arms. And you go marching in, your loud, boisterous self. After all, you do have to speak louder for the older folks. And you say, hello, Miss Sarah, it's good to see you. We're going to be having a service here in a few minutes. And she looks at you and goes, shh, this baby is sleeping. And you walk a little closer to her, and lo and behold, it's not a baby doll, it's a real baby. You blush with shame, and you say, oh, Miss Sarah, I am so sorry. I didn't know you had your grandbaby here. And that woman look at you with eyes of fire and say, grandbaby, nothing. This is my baby boy. I just had him last week. Yeah. At that point, you're like, this is not a nursing home. This is an insane asylum. You slowly back out of the room and you say, all right, Miss Sarah, well, we'll see you later. Take care. Now you're scurrying down the hallway while you're looking for the youth pastor or the pastor, and you're like, get us out of here. And on your way, you bump into an older man who's got a walker with tennis balls on the back two legs and blue balloons tied to the walker. And you go to him and you say, oh, I'm so sorry. What's your name, sir? And he said, Abraham. And you look at him and you say, boy, I just saw the craziest thing down there. And he looked at you and said, yeah, I know. You just came out of my wife's room. And you look at him and say, no. And he says, oh, yeah. You say, sir, just out of curiosity, how old are you? 100. How old's she? She's only 90. Listen, there's every person in this room. You'd say, that's insane. You'd say, that is impossible. You would say that it's absolutely insane to think of that type of thing. You want to know how special that baby was? I'll tell you how special he was. He was a miracle. And that's what God said put on the altar. And some of you ladies tonight, you're like, I couldn't imagine having a baby when I'm 90, even 30 right now. That's just not even on my radar. But 90, I couldn't imagine it. There's some of you, you're like, I don't know if I'll ever have children. I hope I do, but it's not like I have any children to put on the altar, so to speak. I understand that. But I'll tell you what you can do. You can do just like Abraham and have a willingness tonight to put the best that you have on the altar. You know, you take all of your earthly belongings, and right now it doesn't really amount to a whole lot. You say, by the time you take my going to church clothes and you take my clothes that I bought at Goodwill and clothes that I got from my older brother, older sister that passed down to me. My family was so poor, I was an only child, and I still got hand-me-downs. I just got them from my cousins instead of brothers and sisters. And we could just put all of your stuff in a pile, and you know what? If we come up with more than $500, we're like, boy, you're really rich. You're like, I really don't own a lot. You even take my car and throw it in there, and it's not $500. I mean, it's on its last leg. Can I tell you, every one of you sitting in a pew tonight, you have something that is of great value to God. And the least you can do is to be willing to put your life on the altar. Now, I want to ask you tonight, can you recall a time in your life where you put the best that you had, the most you had to offer? You said, God, here am I. Lord, just take me and use me as you please. I'm going to tell you, just as definite a time as when I got saved. I can tell you that there was a time that God broke my heart and I said, Lord, I don't have much. I'm raised in a household of poverty. And Lord, I don't have a lot, but I'll tell you, whatever you want me to do, I'm willing to do it. And you know what I believe? I believe there's some of you in here tonight. You've never truly reached that point. And tonight is the make or break. Are you going to put your Isaac on the altar or are you just going to hold out? And you know what? There may be some of you this evening, there was a time when your heart was tender. Before you ever came to Ambassador, you said, God, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. And that was your heartbeat. And as you sit here tonight, you've got reservations. You've got doubts. You've jerked things off the altar. Abraham was willing to give the best that he had. Here's my question. How about you? Some people hear this story about Abraham and they get a little bit bothered. There's some people that say, I don't like this story, and I'm going to tell you why. Because God was asking Abraham to kill his son. And some people say, I just can't get over that, and I cannot get over that. God asked Abraham to kill his son, and I think that was horrible, and I can't learn anything from that story. Now, my friend, if that's where you're at tonight, let me point out two things to you. Number one, did Abraham actually kill Isaac? The answer is no. It's a moot point. But let me tell you the second thing tonight. God asked Abraham to do something that thousands of years later God would actually do. Because thousands of years later, God the Father gave God the Son on an old rugged cross to die for wretches like you and me. Amen. You know what I say tonight? I say if Abraham was willing to give Isaac and God the Father was willing to give God the Son, why in the world am I not willing to give my piddly Isaacs to God tonight? You want to talk about trust? You put all of your marbles in God's basket and say, whatever you want, God, that's what I want. That's trust. That's faith. Number one, you see the description of the test. Number two, you see the difficulty of the test. Last of all, I want to show you the discovery of the test. I don't know what they do now, but back in the days of dinosaurs and stone, when I was a kid, we actually had paper report cards. Now, I don't know, maybe now they do them electronically. And before me, I think they had dinosaurs that just hauled tablets of stone to parents saying, here's the grade of your cave child. But I always remembered report card day for several reasons. One is that in the public school system, we had to get our report cards signed by our parents. And it was remarkable how much hand signing was done in the back of the bus. Kids that I thought were too young to be moms and dads were all of a sudden signing report cards for their friends. But not me, because my mom and dad knew every time it was coming. And they usually prepped me the week before. Honey, we can't wait to see your report card. I hope you did well. And you know, whenever I knew I had good grades, I couldn't get home fast enough. When I had great grades, I'm telling you, before the school bus had even stopped at my house, I was already up halfway down the aisle, trying to run to jump through the door so I could run down the driveway, run home and rip the door open and say, here it is, look at it. But it was in seventh grade when I made my first C in pre-algebra. And it wasn't because of a lack of brains, it was because of a lack of discipline. You know, sort of ironic, Brother Comfort. I don't think my dad made it past sixth grade, but he expected me to be Einstein. I mean, seriously, I think he dropped out very early on. But for me, I mean, the pressure was there. Do your best. And I'm going to tell you, when that C was on my report card, I knew it was going to be a bad day at the house. The school bus stops at my house, and about 20 minutes after the stop, I finally managed to muster the strength to get up. I slowly mope down the long aisle. It seemed about as long as this auditorium. And right as I arrive at the school bus driver, before I leave, I just look up at her as if it's going to be the last time. And then I make my way down those two steps and I hit the gravel driveway and I drug my feet the entire way home. I remember just tromping up those black steps into the mobile home that we lived in. I just stood there at the door. I didn't rip it open. I just stood there listening. Listening if there was any activity, because if Mom was in the living room, I didn't want to go. Finally, when I thought the coast was clear, I gripped the door. I step inside. I gently close the door behind me. And about that time, my mom jumps out with an air of excitement. Where is it? I could just fall through the floor at that point. You know what I mean? You know when your parents have that Populi password? I love this system a lot better. Why wait for your parents to experience disappointment in October when they can get it in real time? Yeah, you had those calls. I noticed you got a 73 in Life of Christ. What's going on? And you explain it away. You're like, well, Mom, I mean, you know, that was just a bad day, that's all. We all have bad days, right? When you have a good grade, I mean, man, that's a great thing. When you have a bad grade, it's like, oh boy, this is horrible. Well, I want to reveal to you tonight the grade that God gave Abraham, and I want you to see it in the latter part of the story in verse number 12. It says, and he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. Here it is. For now I know that thou fearest God. Do you know what the first part of that grade was? Basically, God was saying this. He was saying, Abraham, you fear me more than you feared losing Isaac. Do you want to tell you where the struggle's at tonight? Sometimes we're more fearful of losing Isaac than being fearful of God. What if? You ever hear the question, what if, you know, in debates? What if? We don't play the what if game, the hypotheticals, politicians, they stay away from the words what if. But I will tell you this, what if you leave this room tonight with your life remaining in your own hands? What happens? It's a question you ought to think about. Because when you leave here unsurrendered, you'll always get second best at best. And you'll underachieve and you'll never have that total full satisfaction as when you're living by faith, trusting God. There's some of you like, well, I'm afraid I will lose this dream of mine. Better for you to lose your dream and to gain God's will. I know that's hard for you to see. Especially when your dream of all involves money. Especially when your dream has selfish ambition. But when you gain God's will, you gain something that is eternal. There's some of you tonight, in the back of your minds, you're more concerned. Well, if I serve the Lord as a missionary, I lose this, I lose that. Let me tell you, you gain far more than you'll ever lose. And the reason you're not giving your Isaac is you're more fearful about losing Isaac than you are fearing God. But notice the second half of that grade. Seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. Basically, God was saying, Abraham, you're willing to give me anything and everything. No reserves. You know, it's easy to give cheap stuff, isn't it? Here, you take this pack of pens I got from Dollar General if you want. But no, you're not having this Parker pen I bought at Walmart. Why? Those cheap Dollar General pens, they're a dime a dozen. It's easy to give cheap stuff, isn't it? You know what God's asking? He's not asking for the Dollar General items tonight. He's asking for the best that you have. The question is, are you willing to give them? I think one of the greatest areas in which I was challenged about an Isaac was when my oldest son Andrew was about 6 or 7 years old. We had noticed that for several months, he had had a breathing problem where his nose was just always stopped up. And we just chalked it up to North Carolina allergies. Some of you, you're like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I move here and Claritin is a regular medication for me now. We thought just maybe he had allergies or something. And after a while, one night we were playing and we noticed that there was something that wasn't right. We looked up in his nostril. And it was obvious there was something there that was not supposed to be there. And so after a little investigation work, we made an appointment with a ear, nose, and throat doctor in Shelby. And so my wife and I, we took Andrew to the Dr. Coder was his name. And we walked in there, and Andrew was all in great spirits. We as parents were a little bit apprehensive, and the doctor got to prodding around and looking around. And after a while, he set our son to the side, and he put us before him, and he said, now listen, Mr. and Mrs. Beal, I want to tell you something. He said, I've never seen anything like this in a child this age. He said, apparently your son has a large nasal polyp, and he said, it may be cancerous. And he said, it's imperative for us to take care of this as soon as possible, get a biopsy and to see what it is, because if it is cancerous, he's going to need some treatment fast. And I'm going to tell you, after he told us that, I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach. Let's see, when our kids were born, because of traveling and evangelism, we never had a service in church. We dedicated our children to the Lord. But I still remember with Andrew in the mobile home that we lived in, on the far end, I remember my wife Michelle and I in a Winnie the Pooh themed nursery. As two parents scared to death for a few moments when he wasn't crying, he was the cryingest baby of them all. But when he wasn't crying, my wife and I, we stood there and we prayed. And I don't remember the exact words, but it basically was this. Lord, this child is yours. Save him at an early age. Lord, we want him to serve you. Help us to raise him. And that was our prayer to God that when he was born. And now, 6 years later, we're told this news. When I marched out of that doctor's office, I would love to tell you that in my heart, I was like, everything's going to be okay. Listen, we're super Christians. This is all going to work for our good and for God's glory. But I'm going to tell you, that was not in my heart. He's sitting strapped in the back seat. I'm looking out the window, hardly talking, tears just pooling up in my eyes, but I don't want to show it. We got home that night, the kids are in bed, my wife's in bed, and then I'm sitting there in the living room and I am really wrestling with God. Have you ever wrestled with God before? I proceed to tell God every reason I don't think this should happen. After all, we're serving God. After all, we're servants of the Lord. And I'm going to tell you, after a few minutes of that, it was like the Lord said, are you done? Now, the Lord's never talked to me in an audible voice, but I'll tell you this. When I sat there that night after I'd made my complaint to God, God reminded me of the Winnie the Pooh nursery. When two young parents stood there scared to death, and we said these words, God, He's yours. And it was like God said, did you really mean that? And there in the darkness, I broke down and I said, you know, Lord, you're right. I do. Let me tell you, there's several of you tonight. You've made out like you've got it all together. And you know what? You've put on a good scene for everybody else. But you find yourself in this beginning week of school wrestling and struggling with God. Listen to me. Put down your dukes and trust Him. Will you pass the test tonight? Let's bow our heads together in prayer. Our heads are bowed. Our eyes are closed tonight. I want to ask you these questions. And I do want to encourage you, don't be in a hurry to leave this place. Listen, you maybe need to let God do a thorough working in your heart tonight. And sometimes that takes time. Sometimes that takes tears. It's okay. It's okay for you to do that tonight. How many of you here tonight, you'd say this, you'd say, Brother Beal, I know as sure as I'm sitting here tonight, my struggle is this. I just need to say, God, here's my life. Take it. I don't care whether you're a freshman or you're a senior. You're here tonight and you'd say, Brother Beal, I know. I've never reached that point. And I know tonight I just need to come clean with God and say, God, my life is yours. And tonight I surrender it all to you. And Lord, I want to give you the dearest thing. I'm not much, but it's the best I have. God, take it tonight and use it. And you'd say, Brother Beal, I'm here tonight. And as best as I know how, I know I need to give my Isaac of my life to the Lord. And you'd say, Brother Beal, tonight I'm willing to tell the Lord, here's my life. Take it and use it as you please. I surrender all. If that's you, would you slip your hand up tonight? Are there folks like that? God bless you. God bless you. A number of you here tonight. God bless you. Thank you. You may put them down. Now, in a few moments, we're going to have a time of invitation. Now, I believe you meant that. I believe when you raised your hand, you're indicating what God's doing in your heart. But can I tell you, it'd just be good for you to carve out a place like I did when I was a 15-year-old boy and tell God what's on your heart tonight. Now, I wonder how many of you here this evening, you'd say, Brother Beal, I've surrendered my life to the Lord. I've done that in the past. But as I sit here tonight, I know there's some recesses of my heart that I've just been unwilling to give up. And I know it's holding me back spiritually. And until I put my Isaac on the altar, I'm not going to be happy. I'm not going to be fulfilled. And you'd say, Brother Bill, there's a specific Isaac that I need to lay on the altar tonight. You'd say, would you please pray for me? If that's you, would you slip your hand up? A number of you tonight, thank you. You may put them down. This is what I'd like to ask you to do. In a moment, we're going to stand. And when we do, why don't you just put your Isaac on the altar tonight? I'm going to ask you to come. And you tell the Lord in your language, in your heart, say, Lord, you know this situation, whether it's your life or whether it's your Isaac. You'd say, tonight, God, I yield this to you. I put it on the altar. Trust God with the dearest thing that you have.